roaming in a straight line. They're going through a tight one. The kids are losing their mind. Let's drink up. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, this is 97.5, the EKSL Sports Zone. Happy Friday, everybody. Weekend is here. Take the rest of the day off. Don't go to work or leave work. Just, you know, make up an excuse. You're sick. You got a cell call.
Baby.
Get out. Listen to us. Go grab a lunch. You know, when you got a wife and you got like four kids and you're a stereotypical Utah family and you go to a restaurant and you're out $120, $130 bucks just going in, even everybody, you make everybody have water, you know, you try to keep tell your 15-year-old to order off the kids' menu, but it doesn't matter, it's still over three digits. You know what, just go to a restaurant by yourself, and you're like, wow, I'm in and out of here for 20, so 22 nice. Bucks.
Hey, judging by Wednesday, we know you took off early. You went to the Delta Center.
Yeah.
We know you did.
We know you have the capability of
we
doing it.
We know you can do it, do it again.
About 45,000 sports fans that showed up there for a free hot dog.
Yeah. I had a buddy of mine who he's my assistant coach on the on our flag football team, and he said that he took a group of young men to that event, and he goes, "We got there 30 minutes before it was supposed to start, still locked out, still
didn't make it in,
didn't make it in.
30 minutes in
30
line
minutes
before.
Yep. Jeez. All right, NHL is taking grip here in Salt Lake City, and with the Jazz not being particularly good over the last few years." NHL might take a serious grip if they're good right out of the gate. But here to talk a little NBA playoffs, Kurt Heelan, NBC Sports, ProBasketballTalk.com. Kurt, you may not know this. We're a hockey town now.
I do know that. I've heard. I'm going to try to bring some NBA excitement back to you because, like, I think I've got some draft news. I heard that they had planned to draft Penick, but then now he's off the board.
Yeah. The Jazz at, 8-9 overall, you take Penick's and there you go.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he's a good athlete, so.
I still can't believe that. Makes no sense to me whatsoever. All right. It was a weird kind of concession-like speech from LeBron James last night in the postgame. It's just basketball. I mean, if that's the attitude we're getting from LeBron, I know you want to hang out and play with Bronny, but it might be time to shut it down.
I was in the room for that. I think I would have thought game two did this when Jamal Murray hit that in that series, hit that dramatic game-winning shot after coming back from 20 down. But the Lakers went into last night with a genuine belief, like, hey, man, it's the same thing they did last year. We're close, right? We keep hanging with these guys. The games are close. We got a chance. And last night was the first time I think it hit them, like, we're not winning this again. Like, we might be just swept out of the building again. And I think there was just a frustration and resignation across all of them, like, we're not good enough anymore. We can't do this. So I'm really curious what LeBron is going to stay with the Lakers. He's going to use his leverage, but they're not going to look like, Anthony Davis will be back and everything else is on the table.
So let's just talk about that series in particular, because I know that Coach Ham is getting thrown under the bus. And I saw the video surface of him trying to drop a play. And LeBron is not paying attention, and he doesn't even know what he's drawing up on the board. You could see it. Is he really responsible for some of what's happening in this 3-0 deficit right now? And I'm curious if how much he's responsible for and if he really is going to be back next year, like the rumors are saying.
I would be it's funny. I saw the report that he's expected to be back. I'll say I've heard it's, especially if they're swept out or even if they win Sunday and it's a gentleman sweep in five, I've heard it's less likely that he's back. Management likes him. They just feel like they can work with him, but it's obviously not working on the court. Like you said, the players I've heard are weary of, and you have to really sit through a lot of press conferences with Darvin Ham to realize he's really just, there's a lot of, we just got to play harder type of stuff. And I don't want to say he doesn't do X's and O's. So I think that he's stuck with lineups that haven't worked. He has made some rotation decisions that we'll call challenging. He loves Torian Prince, even when Torian Prince isn't doing well. And all that said, that's not a winning hand he's been dealt. Like the real problems with this roster start with Rob Pelinka and the front office, and I don't think he's maximizing them. But I don't, you know, if you put Eric Spoelstra on this bench instead, but they still losing six, dude. Like, well, there's only so much you're gonna do.
That's my exact point. Is it's like you're going up against what it almost feels like a juggernaut that is going to run through pretty much anybody, and whether it was Coach Hammer or Coach Spoelstra, it just feels like it's going to be the same outcome. But yeah, that's why, am I way off? Is there a coach that could be in that locker room with Anthony Davis and LeBron James actually producing wins against Denver?
Again, I think if you brought in another coach that maximized their roster, they might win a game or two. But like, it's not going to get over the hump of what is such a just beautifully well-oiled machine. And I think it was LeBron who said this last night in kind of praising them, that they're starting five. There's not an overlap of skills, right? Like, everybody has a role and plays their role, but they're not fighting for, you know, it's not, to use an easy, the one that, example that pops into my head, it's not Atlanta where DeJounte Murray and Trae Young are battling for point guard touches and who's going to kind of run the offense because they can't play off of each other very well. Everybody in Denver knows the roles, accepts the roles, plays off of it perfectly. And ultimately, I think that's what teams are now looking at and trying to build more, just because under the new CBA, you just not you don't want to try to be Phoenix. Like, hey, let's just go get three stars. This will be good enough. I mean, they're not meshing, but I don't think that's good enough. You need depth. You need role players and guys who can kind of step in, and nobody's kind of handled that as well as Utah. I mean, Utah.
Hey, we wish.
You guys hope Utah will. Yeah. As well as Denver has. And I'm not sure. I just don't know how the Lakers fix it, because the buzz is now that they know they've got to get more shot creation to take some of the load off LeBron, but they're going to go get a third, basically a star, a high-level player somewhere, and that's going to sap their depth even more.
So let's go back to Denver a little bit on that, because they've developed that culture, and you got Murray who hits the game winner the other night, but at the end of the day, he's always playing second fiddle to Jokic. And you've got Aaron Gordon, who I'm sure would love to be more of a scorer than he is, but has really settled in on that defensive and hustle guy that is the antagonist. Everybody's embraced their role, as you've mentioned, and that's pretty rare in the NBA where egos run supreme. Do you give credit to Michael Malone? Do you give credit to the front office and being able to identify that in those guys? Or who gets credit for those guys being who they are?
Both, although I think that Hans, I'd be curious your thoughts on this, because I don't want to say coaches don't affect the chemistry and leadership of a team, but I think that tends to be more locker room leader driven, star driven. You know, the Tim Duncan Spurs are the Duncan Spurs because of Duncan. The Steph Curry Warriors accepting their roles and playing the way they did was because of Steph Curry. And I think part of this is just, and is Nikola Jokic and the way he kind of leads and plays. And there was I posted the quote at NBC Sports at the, my takeaways from last night, kind of a second or third one down. There's a great, you know, somebody asks Aaron Gordon about kind of just that, like, how did you guys mesh? Because Aaron Gordon was a scoring machine in Orlando. And he just sounded mature, and he was like, this is fun basketball because we don't really have plays. They have a structure, they have systems, they have sets they want to get to, but it's not a drawn-out play. They're read and reacting, playing off each other, and after multiple years together, they have a real chemistry where we're like, well, they just know. They just, well, this guy goes here, this defender cuts, then we're going to do this, and we've seen it all before, and we know how to respond to it, and we don't have to have detailed play driven drawn up. We can freelance most of this, and that just makes them so much harder to defend because they're not following a predictable script.
So Kurt, give me the background and the situation that we just watched with Joel Embiid last night. I mean, scoring great and big win for the 76ers, but the antics were really bizarre. Yeah. Can you kind of help us understand what Joel Embiid is going through?
I think that that's – personally, I think that, that's him, for lack of a better word, fighting, for pushing his team, like feeling like he's got to do everything because he kind of – he's got to be dominant. He's got to be dominant if they're going to not only get out of this series but advance like they think they can. You know, the winner of this series will get the – either the Pacers or the kind of shorthanded banged up Bucks in the next round. And both of those teams in, you know, Knicks and Sixers think they could advance to the conference finals. So I think there was some of that pressure, but I don't know about you guys. Like I tweet this out. There's, I don't know how he doesn't get tossed for grabbing Mitchell Robinson's legs like that in, when he could up in the air. And I think they legislated the outcome. You know, he didn't really get hurt. It was a relatively soft fall. You know, maybe it was the Charles Barkley fall. He practiced it. But they didn't legislate the act to me. They legislated the outcome. And I'm not sure that's what that should have been. I thought he should have been gone. As much as that, by the way, would have absolutely changed the game in the series.
Yeah.
I don't know
yeah.
how you allow that.
Yeah. Kurt Heelan joining us, NBC Sports, ProBasketballTalk.com, right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Who gets picked number one overall coming up in June?
Sar was on top, and a lot of teams – honestly, it's going to depend on the lottery because there's not a consensus number one, and I don't mean like a Wembanyama generational talent. I mean, even in the years that there's not that kind of guy at the top, there, even you know with the NFL, there tends to be a consensus around, right, like the top pick or two. You kind of like rarely is it a surprise. This year, I think it's genuinely going to depend on who gets this pick because people have different things. It's Sar or I'm going to the 6'8 wing out of France whose name I would butcher if I tried to pronounce it, and I'm not looking at it, so I'm not even going to try off the top of my head. I was just writing about him the other day coming out where he's got it's interesting. He, like this guy's got 6'8". Wing defender, can guard one, is guarding one through four in the highest level of France ball, shoots really well, cuts really well off the ball. He's going to go number one. He doesn't really create his own shot as a wing. He's kind of a guy who's going to ultimately be, well, to use a Denver analogy, he's going to be more, different, slightly different game, but more Aaron Gordon, where everybody else is doing the creating and I'm capitalizing on it rather than me having to kind of create my own shot most nights. That's not normally the guy who goes number one, but that's kind of where this draft is.
Is that Zachary Rizaker?
I knew it was Zach or Zachary, and I'm like, yes, yeah. That's the name, yes.
Yeah, I've seen some of his stuff. I've heard quite a bit about him, but I don't know enough about him. Give me your thoughts on him again, because I'm just curious, because I've seen it was just the other day I saw some of him, and I was like, I got to look more into this guy.
Yeah, he's you know, I think ESPN has him going number one now, and I think a guy I trust, Sam Vecenie at The Athletic, does as well. But he's a 6'8". I mean, he's got the size of a wing. He's got NBA athleticism. He shoots the ball from three really well, cuts really well, really long, switchable defender. The knock is that he's not a great shot creator for himself and others. He is somebody – like, let's say Detroit lands the number one pick. He makes a lot of sense playing next to Cade Cunningham, who's going to have the ball in his hands and create for others, or Charlotte gets it, and it's LaMelo Ball, assuming he stays healthy. But like something like that where he's playing off the guy with the ball, it makes a lot more sense than putting him somewhere where, like, hey, we're going to give this guy the ball and let him completely go nuts and create for himself, because that's just – I don't think that's who he is. And – my point is, like, that's very rare for that guy to go number one.
Yeah.
The guy who goes number one has to – being able to create your own shot or create shots for yourself and others is still the most valued skill in the NBA.
But what's weird – and, Scotty, here we go again. It's like the top two names that we're talking about, that I think they're both out of France.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're both out of France.
Alex Sarr is out of France, and Bakayar, I believe, is out of France.
Yeah, Sarr was French, but he played this year in – he did what a few Americans have done. He went and played in the Australian that Stars program they have. So he went to Australia and played down there. I believe for Perth off the top of my head. I'm not looking at my notes, but yeah.
So, European players, man.
I want to circle back to the East a little bit. The Magic get a Game 3 victory. The 76ers get a Game 3 victory. Is that a sign that those series are going to be close, or is that just delaying the inevitable that the Knicks and Cavs are moving on?
I think the 76ers-Knicks series has been close the whole way. That's been a really tight series, so we'll see what happens. They've got till Sunday, which is good for Embiid. They've got the extra day off in there. I think, that one feels like it's going to go 6 or 7. The games are really close. I'm not sure what to make of what happened in Orlando last night, because they looked so bad for so many games, and then I was – they blew them out, and I'm looking at the numbers, and I'm texting somebody I knew, and they're like, everybody thinks, was it just a one-off shot creation where they absolutely killed from the mid-range last night, and they knocked down a lot of threes, and they shot really well, and that's not who Orlando is. They're not that good a shooting team, and last night they couldn't miss. So that one feels more like a one-off situation where you're like, okay, well, that happened. But I don't think they can replicate it multiple times. Sort of like that Heat game the other night, although I take that with a grain of salt with Miami, but they were so hot shooting. You're like, well, they're not going to do that again. Right. They're not going to make that many threes in a row and knock it down. And I don't think Orlando can replicate that, but they're back in the series at least.
Well, I know that the Freak is out for tonight. I'm wondering, what is Jimmy Butler's timeline with Miami? Just talking about Miami and what they did, and they did it without Butler, which was incredible. But what are you hearing with him?
Probably the next series. I mean, if they'd have to get through this one, but it's an MCL sprain, and that's 2 week minimum. Obviously sprains are kind of on a curve and depends, but I was told at least two, probably closer to 3 weeks, which really puts him in the second round before he's back. So they're going to have to find more of these type of games with a red hot Tyler Hero. And Bam's going to be great every game, because Bam is great every game. But it's, they just don't have the same shot creation without Jimmy out there, and they got it for a night.
So I was just talking about sweeps. I've been wondering if the Suns are going to find a way to manufacture a win. And I was going through the first two games of that series, and they have not let Kevin Durant outside of 95 points. They have not let him break into the hundreds. Minnesota's clamped down defensively. Does Phoenix find a way to creep out of this and maybe get a win and make this interesting for even 5 seconds?
I think they're capable, obviously, because there's just so much, again, another team with just so much scoring talent on the roster. But I don't think they can sustain it. And this is where you're really seeing how much the length and athleticism and defense of Minnesota matters, right? Jaden McDaniels has been – he scored 25 points last game. He has been brilliant defensively and has the length to bother KD as much as anybody can bother Kevin Durant. But they've got, they've just got good defenders across the board, and Rudy Gobert in the paint. So it's just Anthony Edwards is a really good defender, and he's young and athletic, and it's becoming hard. Beal's not getting points he wants. Booker's not getting the looks he wants. And now they're without Grayson Allen with his sprained ankle, so they're just minus another shooter. I just don't think they have enough. They could get hot for a game, but I don't think they can sustain it. And I will tell you guys, Minnesota's a tough matchup for Denver, probably the toughest matchup in the West, because they have the size to match up with a really big Denver team across the front line and good defenders across the board. That series is going to be tough. That's not a cakewalk for Denver.
Before we let you go, you mentioned Grayson Allen. Do you think he's worthy of that contract he got?
I don't think that was unreasonable in this NBA for just what he shoots. Outside of the obvious, national love for Grayson Allen and his game, him and all the Dukies, really. Outside of the kind of just annoyance factor of Grayson Allen, like, he's actually a good role player. And he actually, this was this season where he defended better and kind of really fit in. He played really well this season.
Yeah. Well, Kurt, we appreciate your time. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the games. And we'll do it again next week.
All right. I'll talk to you hockey fans later.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kurt.
Take off, eh?